This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 234 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode is part of our Drums of Autumn read-along. To find out more about the read-along and how to participate, visit outlanderpod.com/DOA.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we'll be discussing Chapter 9, entitled Two Thirds a Ghost. This chapter pisses me off the most. Sorry. Come on, let me talk what I want to.
Leanne F. writes, the title, makes me think of the definition of a black slave then. Slaves counted as two-thirds of a person. Bonnet was a ghost previously in Chapter 2, and now he is two-thirds of a ghost? Interesting title, but not sure what to make of it. Those are some good points. Also, she writes, regarding flatboats in America. Here are some pictures showing what the boat probably looked like that Claire and Jamie were taking upriver to River Run. So we'll include that link that Leanne shared with us. Liz M. writes, with every mention of ghosts so far in this book, I keep thinking of Jamie's ghost in Outlander, connected to Claire even as an apparition. I wonder what the significance of ghosts will be as we read further. Now, the first words I wrote about this chapter, it's still hot. Liz M. comments on the heat. Quote, the heat of the day was down to the earth, glowing with unseen energy beneath the surface of the soil, the rich, fertile flatlands simmering in black heat behind the screen of pines and sweet gum trees, working the alchemy of water and trapped sun, unquote. Diana has such an earthy writing style, and I love when she turns words into splendid imagery. Okay, it is night, and they're still traveling on the river to Cross Creek. The moon is out, but it's small and faint, so the visibility will not be great, even though there was a lantern hung on the bow, and it was still hot. Jamie and Claire are sitting still, not moving much. Young Ian is inside the small quarters learning more card games. Cindy R. writes, I enjoy Jamie's struggles in dealing with Ian. He may have missed out on raising Bree, but he's got his hands full with his nephew. After the frustration of the Greek lesson from the last chapter, now the youngster is gambling with the crew and presumably picking up some shady practices. I'm tickled by Jamie's statement to Claire regarding Ian, quote, if a man's bound to go to the devil, he'll find a way to do it, no matter where you set him down, unquote. They see an opossum on the bank, and both Jamie and Rollo freak out. And Myers did say that opossum were lecker.
I was going to say, really? You're going to do that to our listeners who don't speak German?
That means delicious. And that's gross. Claire hands Jamie a bag of roasted peanuts. She instructs him to take the shells off before he eats them. He replies, quote, I'm ignorant, Sassenach, not a fool. I'm sorry, that just made me laugh, unquote. But that part was me, not part of the quote. Anyway, you know what it was. Leanne F. writes, peanuts were used to feed livestock in America prior to the
1930s. Oh my God, please enunciate. Please enunciate.
Did it sound like penis?
Sounded like penis.
Penises were used to feed livestock in America.
I don't recommend that.
I don't think that's probably what they did. Peanuts were used to feed livestock in America prior to the 1930s when George Washington Carver introduced the American standby we know as peanut butter.
Can we just take this moment to appreciate how well matched Sam Heughan is for the character of Jamie? They both love peanut butter or peanuts.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. It took me a second. In the English-speaking world, this is from Wikipedia, peanut growing is most important in the United States. Although it was mainly a garden crop for much of the colonial period, it was mostly used as animal feedstock until the 1930s. The U.S. Department of Agriculture initiated a program to encourage agricultural production and human consumption of peanuts in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. George Washington Carver developed hundreds of recipes for peanuts during his tenure in the program. Jamie asks Claire what she'd think about settling here. She reminds him of the coming revolution. Dude, hubby, you know that's only 9 years away. They had experienced this same Cassandra shiz before. She'd been right about Culloden, the Scots, Bonnypin's Charlie, etc. All of it. And here she was spreading it again. Quote, and neither my knowing nor his had been enough to save us. 20 aching years of separation and the ghost of a daughter he would never see lay behind that knowing, unquote. Claire thinks that perhaps knowing...
What? Does anyone feel like knowing where the book goes as... Not everyone is, I don't know anyone who's, well, no, I won't say that. Not everyone, there will be first time readers that are there following are along readers. With, that are following along with
this, the,
with our read along, which I doubt. I think once they start reading, they're going to be like, hold on.
I can't stop.
Right. Does anyone knowing, and I'm not going to fill it in here because Ginger and her spoilers, but knowing where the book goes from, you know, from here forward. Does anyone feel like Diana's laying it on real thick?
A little. I can see what you're saying. But stop right there.
I'm done. I will stop.
Okay. Claire thinks that, quote, perhaps knowing what was coming, we might contrive to stay clear of the worst, unquote. Dear Claire, we know how that goes. I love Diana's language use. Also a callback to the classical Latin used in the previous chapter. Quote, should we seek our place carefully, we might indeed escape the roving eye of Mars, unquote.
I think they should pack up the van or the truck, the car like Beverly Hillbillies, and just put Jocasta in a rocking chair on the top and just drive out to California so they don't ever have to deal with anything going on. Huh. They would totally miss the colonial revolution if they went out to California.
That's true. That's true. And now a quick word about one of our sponsors.
For 8 weeks, ending on February 26th, Blue Apron is teaming with Whole30 to bring you delicious recipes. Their menus will feature two Whole30 approved recipes each week, like seared steaks and warm lemon salsa verde with roasted broccoli and sweet potato, and chicken and kale salad with spicy tahini dressing. I love tahini. Kickstart your new year with Blue Apron and Whole30.
So besides the fact, if you're doing Whole30 and you would like to give a Blue Apron a try, to me, this is a no-brainer. You know, take advantage of this offer. And it's just for our listeners. So we're very happy to help introduce you to Blue Apron. And besides this special teaming they have right now, Blue Apron is just a good idea. If you love to cook and you just want to try something a little bit new, or you just want to, you want to be exposed to more stuff and have the convenience of not having to shop for that stuff, Blue Apron is something you need to try. They deliver fresh, pre-portioned ingredients, and they come with step-by-step recipes, and it comes right to your door. And they can be cooked under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season. And if you look at, it's like, okay, Ginger and Summer, I'm going to give it a try. And you sign in and you look and you say, two out of those recipes, like, I wouldn't eat, or I don't like that protein, or I can't eat that protein. You know, fine. You can skip it. Number one, you can go into your settings and determine which proteins you will or will not include that you don't want to come to you. And also, even if you have you're an omnivore and you eat literally anything, if you're just not a fan of some dish, just wait it out. Look at the next week, because it's up to you which meals, which weeks you decide to receive.
Blue Apron is treating the Out Under podcast listeners to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/outlander.
So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off with free shipping at blueapron.com/outlander.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Oh man, then Diana has to go and make me tear prick. Jamie says he hasn't given her much save a wee silver ring. Claire's reply, what?
Hey guys, now I'm thinking when you said it that way, it sounded like an unaccented attempt at Irish. Make me tear prick.
What?
You had to make me tear prick.
Oh, Lord, Summer. What is it with you and me?
I don't know.
And my language. Jamie says he hasn't given her much, save a wee silver ring. Her reply, quote, "You've given me a lot more than that. Brianna, for one," unquote. And then, quote, "She's maybe the real reason. For staying, I mean. This is her place, no? She'll be born here. She'll live here." "That's right," I said softly. "This will be her country. Hers in a way it could never be mine or his, no matter how long we might live here," unquote. F-doodle.
F-doodle. F your own doodle.
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm not cursing at you. I'm cursing at it. Jamie doesn't want to fight, but if he can be part of making it safe and a good land for her, he says, quote, "It would please me," unquote. Claire tells Jamie that she left his mother's pearls for Brianna, and the ring is all I need, Claire says. Note this focus on the ring. That's all I'm going to say.
Again,
Liz M.
Laying
writes,
it on thick, given where we're going.
Just a little bit. Liz M. writes, "Curious question. I always wondered, why doesn't Jamie have a ring? Cultural difference?" I, that's a good point. I don't know. I know contemporary America and the UK, I think it's traditional and typical for men to wear wedding rings, but not all men wear wedding rings.
Our dad doesn't.
And then he what's the reason for that? He has one.
You don't remember? I think
no.
He had it and then he did something to his finger and he needed to get it resized and he just never got it resized. So he just, and yeah.
Oh, dad.
We should get him one of those fancy ones that are like made out of silicone or something so that he can do his woodworking while still wearing it.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Oh, that's true. And he's also a carpenter, so he does a lot of woodworking. So I understand wanting to be careful with that. Jamie whispers to Claire, "Dami basia mile," and she replies, "Dein mile altera." They tie up again near midnight. They are almost there. So they doze off, but they wake to shouting and barking. They had been boarded by pirates.
I swear. They have learned nothing. Every time they get on a boat, and if you read the last book, every boat they were on was boarded or shipwrecked. Huh. I would, if I were them, I would steer clear of boats from now until ever. Boats are not their thing. Between Jamie's seasickness, between Jamie's seasickness and constantly being boarded, shot at, or chased, or shipwrecked, I think that boats are not for them.
It was near dawn, but still dark. There was fighting and confusion. We find out Rollo has been hurt, and there's a scuffle about a pistol. Young Ian asks Claire's help with Rollo. We find out later on he'd only been nicked, though, so he's okay, but it is kind of freaking out. Now, all the strange men were masked, and because Rollo was growling and barking and like making like he wanted to, obviously, like a guard dog, making like he wanted to go after these people, the man whom Rollo had almost bitten, or maybe he did bite him, but had gone after earlier, was threatening to shoot him. And to keep the man safe, and thus Rollo safe, Ian put his shirt over Rollo's head to blind him, to save him. Cindy R. writes, "Poor puppy, if one can call a wolfhound a puppy. Claire racing to help. I love that woman's tenacity to heal, be it man or beast. I think this encounter will soften Claire's heart to him. Remember, she has a bad history with wolves." That's true. The taller pirate asks how many are aboard, and Claire recognizes that voice. Summer, who is this pirate?
Get ready to bleep me. That motherfucking Stephen Bonnet.
As soon as you said that, I knew what you were going to say. Oh, gosh. I'm sorry. I woke up my cat. I'm so sorry, baby. She was sleeping in my pouch. I totally woke her up. The men go into the cabin, breaking things left and right. One of them is rummaging through Claire's brand new to her medicine box. Bonnet stops him. She goes in after him and like is, you know, trying to like stop him, and she hits him over the head and wants to do it again, but Bonnet stops her from injuring him.
She goes straight up chaos monster again. Like We all love Claire. I'm not going to say we love Claire. I love Claire. You love Claire. Claire is the main character. Claire and Jamie are the main characters of the book right now. But she constantly, well, forever. They keep adding more quasi main characters, but
it's still them.
The only thing you can truly count on is that she's going to make a really shitty decision in a moment of peril.
Yep.
Almost every time. And this is that time in this chapter.
Oh, Claire. And now a quick word about one of our sponsors.
So what is Beachbody On Demand? Beachbody On Demand is an online fitness streaming service that gives you unlimited access to a wide variety of highly effective, world-class workouts personalized to meet your needs.
They are amazing. Beachbody On Demand includes extensive nutritional content, so it's not just workouts, and all of it is to help people achieve their health and fitness goals. Now, Beachbody On Demand is the total package to help you become the total package this year. I mean, I'd like to be the total package. I mean, Summer, I think you're someone's total package.
I would like to think so. But I mean, I've heard of Beachbody before, hadn't you?
Yeah, I've seen infomercials. Like, I've seen Chalene Johnson. I don't want to not say a name just in case we're not supposed to say a name. I've seen like a Pio infomercial. I've seen a lot of infomercials for P90X. Yeah, I've seen.
Well, and that's the thing. Even if you haven't heard of Beachbody, which everyone I've talked to has heard of Beachbody, you'll have heard of a lot of the brands that they represent, like P90X, like you said, Pio, Insanity, the 21 Day Fix. T25.
So Summer and I have a chance to check out and use Beachbody, and I have been digging it. And we both thought, you know, let's do something easy just to step into it to make it work with our lives. And that was, we agreed to try the 10-minute trainer.
Who doesn't have 10 minutes?
I mean, yeah, exactly. But, and I've liked it, but something I am excited to continue with is the 21 day fix. Now it has both the eating component as well as the fitness. Right now I'm concentrating on the videos because that is what I want to try out first, but I'm really excited.
Well, what I love about Beachbody On Demand is the convenience, because you don't have to worry about keeping a DVD in the same place. I lose things all the time. I'm habitual. If it's a DVD, I will take it out of the machine and put it into whatever DVD case I have handy. For me to find one DVD, I have to go through probably 15 or 20 different DVD cases to kind of find the path of where my DVD went. It's kind of like a puzzle. But with this, you don't have to worry about keeping track of a DVD. It's all online and easy to find and right at your fingertips when you're ready to do it.
And there's no gym or schedule. You do it on your own schedule. And your annual subscription is cheaper than a gym membership.
Right now, our listeners can get a free trial membership when you text Outlander to 303030.
You will get full access to this entire platform for free. All the workouts and nutrition information free. Just text Outlander to 303030. Cindy R. writes, enter bad guy pirate number one, Steven Bonnet. Yep, same guy this family helped in chapter two. I remember the first time reading this feeling so betrayed. How dare someone use or abuse our Jamie and Claire like that? Got my hackles up for sure. I feel the title of this chapter refers to Steven Bonnet. He who should have one died by hanging in the first chapter, and two, died at the hand of the soldiers at the checkpoint as Jamie and Claire helped him escape in the second chapter.
You know,
because once you're dead, right? His cool disdain just makes me want to pop him in the nose.
It makes me wish that when he'd been stabbed by that soldier's bayonet,
he had bled to death.
Not even that. That's too good for him. I wish that he had contracted like tetanus from a dirty, dirty bayonet and then gotten lockjaw.
Oh, Lord.
That's what I wish on Steven Bonnet, lockjaw.
Bad guy pirate number two, Mr. Roberts. How dare you ransack Claire's newly acquired medical kit, an anniversary gift to boot. If that doesn't call for an ale bottle to the head, I don't know what does.
My issue with the way he's rifling the medicine box is the same issue I have with every robber that's ever robbed a place I've lived in, is they always, in the bedrooms, pull the drawers out,
out
of the dresser and dump them on the floor. And I'm like,
well, they are in a hurry,
I guess. But I'm like, clearly, if you've been casing my joint, you know I'm not coming home for a while. You have plenty of time to just go through the things. I'm like, don't dump all my things on the floor. It's insult to injury. Not only have you taken my things, but now I have to clean up after your ass. And that's the thing about the medicine box, is that it wasn't just that he was looking through it to see if there was anything of value in it, is that he was pouring out all of the ingredients from the bottles.
Oh, that pissed me off. That's, I was like, really? Saying. I mean, if nothing else, although it's the same it's the same end effect, take the bottles and like throw them in anger or in whatever against the floor and shatter them. I mean, that's a waste as well. But just to turn it upside down and to pour it out, what the heck? That's just stupid. I agree. It's so wasteful. So wasteful. Now it's almost light. The man she'd hit took her ring. Bonnet made her give them both up. She gives him the gold one. At first, she doesn't know which one it was. She gives him one. It comes.
She didn't.
Okay. She goes to give. Hold on. She goes to give him the gold one. It comes off more easily. But just before she hands them over, she puts them both in her mouth. The pirate slams her and she spits one of them out. At this point, she doesn't know which one she spit out. But she's about to be assaulted again. Jamie slams her against the floor. Bonnet gets his men to leave him alone. And then Jamie, assured by Bonnet that Claire is safe, stands up. Meanwhile, Claire has swallowed the other one. Continuation of bad guy pirate number two. Compensation in the way of Claire's wedding rings? Nope, not having it. Pops them in her mouth, shades of Jamie's sapphire. Can you imagine the guy rooting around in her mouth for those? That was gross. Liz M. writes, quote, I stared hard at our assailant. What?
That just makes me think of when we were talking about season one. That was the season of Blackjack being disgusting. When he put his thumb in her mouth.
Oh.
And everyone, we were like, that. No one likes that. No one thinks that. No woman likes that and thinks it's sexy.
Do you mean in the book or in the show?
In the show.
Oh, because that was gross.
That's what I'm saying. It's like when we talked about it, I was like, nobody likes that. Nobody thinks that's sexy when you shove a thumb in their mouth. And I feel like it's the same thing here. You put your hands in my mouth. I'm like, don't put your hands in my mouth. I don't know where those have been. That's gross.
Liz M. writes, I stared hard at our assailants. I meant to know them again if I saw them, masks or no masks. This I have never thought about this, so this is really, really interesting. Liz M. writes, this seems reminiscent of the attack in Paris. This time, though, Claire is prepared to identify these attackers, taking in every detail she can. Did that make you think of anything? Because the attack in Paris had really far-reaching consequences. This has really far-reaching consequences, which we're not going to spoil.
That would be the only comparison I would think between these two things. I wouldn't have... If this were my first time through the book, I would not have immediately thought of Paris.
Oh, I thought about it.
But yeah. knowing how every instance that happens in Diana Gabaldon novels comes back around in some way, shape, or form, we all should have known that this was not going to be the last we heard of Mr. Stephen Bonnet.
Maybe, maybe not. We don't know. Like I said, Bonnet gets his men to leave him alone. Then Jamie, assured that Bonnet has Claire, that Claire is safe, stands up. And then we find out, of course, the worst thing would be if someone were shot or killed or hurt besides Rollo, right? Or any of them really badly. Of course, that's the worst. But the next to worst thing, Mother Father has the ever-loving gems. He tells the men, quote, we have what we came for, unquote. And they leave. Lorraine B. writes, how many of you think the man Roberts, who was with Stephen Bonnet, is named after Dread Pirate Roberts from The Princess Bride? It makes me laugh every time I read it. See, this is why
I've never thought that. I have never thought that.
This is why Summer, and she doesn't, should not read my notes beforehand, because my notes include you guys' commentary. Because I love these unfiltered reactions. So the people on the raft, their boat, the big raft, get a move on. Jamie is PO'd, kind of at her, just a little bit, and the situation, but kind of at her. Cindy R. writes, such a sense of defeat. I was first confused by Claire being worried about Jamie being upset or mad with her. I wasn't sure if it was because she provoked the pirates by trying to swallow the rings. Maybe it was because he was angry with himself for helping Bonnet in the first place. Now I think it's simply because he was scared Claire would be hurt, possibly killed, during the struggles. We see this reaction in Voyager as well, when she was wounded by the pirate cutlass. Do others interpret this differently? I think your former thought about, I mean, I think he's definitely bugged with her. He's not happy with what she did. But as we'll discuss in just a minute or three, and Diana comes out really strongly at the end of this chapter that he feels very guilty. He feels very guilty about what he did out of the goodness of his heart. Full stop. So to help Claire vomit up the ring, because Claire's like, I'm going to wait, yo. Jamie's like, believe me, it's really better this way. Jamie uses some of the residue of the captain's pipe in a cup of water so that she forces her to swallow it to help induce vomiting.
I'd have been like, yo, I know where the gag reflex is. Why don't I just, you know, poke my tonsils a minute? I don't want to drink that.
That's just disgustable. Fergus brings an empty bucket. So like having multiple people help out is like having an I mean, you do have an audience because you're like on a ship, on a boat. You can't really escape from people. But I mean, how awful is that? I mean, it is better than pooping. I would vomit in front of people. I would not poop in front of people. So she wants to wait for the other end. Jamie says, quote, I've done it that way, Sassenach, and it's a good deal messier than you might think. It's also not a pleasant thing to do on a boat in close company, unquote. So he forces her to drink it and to swallow. Here, I could vomit. With her. And of course, it works. When it comes up and it's all clean and shiny, we find out she had, of course, swallowed the silver ring. She's pissed. I will bleep myself. You are a grade A, double-dyed, sadistic bastard, Jamie Fraser. He replies, quote, I expect so. If you feel well enough to call me name, Sassenach, you'll do. Unquote. So in a weird way, okay, this is where Summer is going to either say, oh, okay, I can maybe see that, or going to like start cackling hysterically.
Don't tell me what I'm going to do. Not just say it. Don't put any okay. expectations on me. Just say it.
Well, I'm curious.
Then be curious
in a weird
silently.
Way. Hold on. Shut up. Let me say it. So in a weird way, her vomiting up her ring, his ring, the ring that symbolized their union was giving birth, a rebirth to them.
No, I think I think it was just another form
I got more.
Of the spanking scene.
Oh, I can see that.
As opposed to, yeah.
But the other
well,
end.
No, it was just, I told you I'd never spank you again. I never said I wouldn't make you drink tobacco and vomit up our wedding ring.
Okay, well, then you're going to have to sit this one out. So their new life together.
How long is here, this one?
Just a little bit. Here oh, in a God. New world. And this is all symbolism that I never had thought about this in any other read through. But I just thought about it today. Just kidding. I was like, huh. Okay. And I hope this, I know it's gross, but I hope I don't start laughing because now that Summer's like, no. Okay. So their new life together here in the new world. So what I'm saying is her vomiting up their ring, his ring, a ring that symbolized their union, was giving birth, like a rebirth to them and their new life together here in the new world. Not quite a pregnancy, though she does experience prolonged nausea and she vomits. That's kind of hokey. Okay. Mm. They had gone from rags to riches. Nothing to their name. Claire is going through a lot of internal emotions and feelings for Jamie right now. Quote, I had never before considered myself a person who placed much value on money, but having the certainty of security ripped away in this violent fashion had given me a sudden and quite unexpected attack of vertigo, as though I were falling down a long, dark well, powerless to stop. Unquote. Now, does this not sound similar to her fear of falling through the puddle? Only here, she does not see a star to grab onto. And Jamie felt the danger, but also the responsibility of them all. And to think of the money they had sent to Leary.
That bitch.
I know, it's Summer. It really upset Summer. It makes me laugh. Jamie had helped Bonnet escape the hangman's noose and set him free. How many would suffer because of it? She tells him, you're not to blame. He gives her Applejack and places the silver wedding ring on her finger again.
About time he gave her the Applejack. Could you imagine?
No kidding.
He said it next to her. She was not feeling well.
I know, but at the very least, he should have handed it to her and said, swish and spit, something. Dude. It's like at the dentist. They don't leave you with all that grit in your mouth. She's probably still got little pieces of tobacco in her teeth.
Oh, gross, Summer. Leanne F. writes, they drink Applejack in this chapter, and Claire seems to enjoy it very much. It seems pretty potent and a good substitute for whiskey. From Wikipedia. And we'll include this link as well in the show notes. Applejack was historically made by concentrating cider through the traditional method of freeze distillation. The alcoholic fruit beer produced after the fall harvest was left outside during the winter. Periodically, the frozen chunks of ice which had formed were removed, thus concentrating the unfrozen alcohol in the remaining liquid. Huh. That makes sense. Starting with a fermented juice with an alcohol content of less than 10%, the concentrated result can contain 25 to 40% alcohol. Hot dang. When commercial production began, Applejack was also starting to be produced through evaporative distillation. Modern commercially produced Applejack is no longer produced by jacking.
Wow.
I did not read this, you can tell, but rather by blending apple brandy and neutral spirits. Yeah,
that's
let's not
jack. What's produced by jacking these days.
Okay, so they don't. So
what is, you know what Applejack is to me though? A really bad cereal.
Oh, God. That's called Applejacks.
I know, but that's what I think of whenever they said Applejack. I'm like, Applejacks. I don't like that cereal.
So they talk about it, and they don't think that Bonnet knew about the jewels beforehand. Otherwise, he likely would have attacked them sooner. Jamie believes that he learned of it, Bonnet, from one of Lillington's servants, possibly. The sudden realization of the loss of her other ring hits her. Quote, I had worn that gold ring for nearly 30 years. Token of vows taken, forsaken, renewed, and at last absolved. A token of marriage, of family. Of a large part of my life, and the last trace of Frank, whom, in spite of everything, I had loved. Side note, their passage through the dark, tree-filled wilderness is also like a birth, a trip through the birth canal. There are often problems and pain and vomiting during labor and loss. The death of what was in order to get to the new. Remember the discussion between Claire and Jenny and carrying babies in Outlander? While the baby is inside you, it's all hopes and dreams and imagining for what it might be.
You know what else it is?
Yeah.
Quiet.
That's true. Once the baby comes out, the reality of what he or she is born, and the one you knew so little about metaphorically dies. In order to get to the new, you must release the old. Part of this painful birth canal journey has been the attack of the pirates, the loss of something old and dear, the memory of Brianna, their truly final step into the reality of their new life on the way to family. Liz M. writes, whenever I see River Run mentioned, does anyone else think of Game of Thrones? Would this then be labeled House Cameron?
No.
In Diana's description of Claire's hand in Jamie's, I'm reminded of man's hand in God's, similar to the Sistine Chapel, the hands reaching toward each other, so I know they're not the same. And as a final bit of symbolism to bring them to their new life, the rain falls. Simultaneously, the breaking of a woman's waters and the cleansing water of baptism, of forgiveness for all that has come before. Quote, it came in a rush, dropping a veil over boat and shore, pattering noisily on leaves and deck and water, lending a temporary illusion of concealment. It washed cool and soft across my skin, momentary balm on the wounds of fear and loss. Unquote. And, quote, I felt at once horribly vulnerable and yet completely safe. But then I had always felt that way with Jamie Fraser. Unquote.
So this won't be the truth when this airs, but today is the 4-year anniversary of the time Sam Heughan held me so tenderly.
That's true.
The picture came up on my Facebook feed today, and I've always felt safe in Sam's arms.
Happy birthday, Diana. And today is the 4th anniversary of me and Katrina doing duck face together.
It's true.
Lorraine B. writes, and with this line, I stroked his hair, smoothing the thick strands that were so much like Brianna's. How many of you pictured both Jamie and Brianna with thick hair that had body and a bit of wave to it? I honestly don't think I've ever come across a person with thick hair that is straight as a pin. Just saying.
My mom.
Oh gosh, that's true. It's very straight.
That's why she keeps it short.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what her hair would be like.
I don't know how. I mean, maybe if she had like 10 kids, one of them would have gotten her gene. But with two kids, zero of them got her hair gene. Gracious.
My daughter got it more than we did.
Yeah, that's true.
She has her thickness. It's not as coarse as hers, but it's definitely as thick as my mom's.
Leanne F.
And your mom's.
That's good to know. Leanne F. writes, Fools. There is a lot of talk about fools and foolish things of varying degrees of seriousness in this chapter. Early in the chapter, Jamie is introduced to peanuts by Claire. Jamie says he is ignorant about this American food, but, quote, not a fool. He doesn't mind that Claire knows more than he does in this situation and recognizes he has things to learn about this new world they now find themselves in. Later, Bonnet tells his fellow robber, Roberts, not to be a fool about wasting his bullet when he wants to shoot Rollo. Shooting the dog would make the robber feel very good at the moment, but it will take away his ability to threaten the boat's passengers and get their valuables from them. Bonnet wants Roberts to keep his mind on the ultimate goal here. Additionally, Bonnet calls Claire, quote, a foolish woman, unquote, after she swallows the ring, and Jamie must jump in and tackle her to keep Roberts from hurting her further. Claire must then live through the next few minutes thinking Jamie is being stabbed or kicked for her rash action. Quote, oh God, they stabbed him, Claire thought in agony of terror. We have often seen Claire act without thinking of the consequences in such situations. You think? Sometimes these impulsive actions get them both into all sorts of trouble. Actually, most times. That's Ginger. Continued, and Claire feels more foolish when she gets the tobacco ash treatment from Jamie and get the ring she swallowed back. But Jamie reassures her that this is a better plan than waiting until it comes out the other end. And ultimately, Jamie recognizes that letting Bonnet escape his fate earlier in the book has resulted in this situation they now find themselves in presently and was a very foolish decision on his part. His actions have already had repercussions and we'll have to see just what other, if any, repercussions they might have. The second theme I liked in this chapter segues nicely with the fool theme since the aphorism, quote, a fool and his money are soon parted, unquote, might fit here as well. Because Jamie made what he sees as a foolish decision in sparing Bonnet's life earlier, Jamie and Claire are now without any funds to use in their new life in North Carolina. As Claire imagines, they have gone from riches to rags. They have lost the gems that were going to allow them to make decisions about what they wanted to do and who they wanted to be in this new world. With the gems, they had a safeguard to ensure they had greater possibilities and more choices. Jamie thinks he might want to try his hand at farming in North Carolina, and the gems would help them purchase land and a house. He would be able to buy Claire luxuries she deserves but has never had because of their peripatetic life together, where they are always on the run from one thing or another. Claire assures Jamie that all she has ever needed is Brianna and him. She treasures the pearls he gave her and that she left behind for Brianna, and the silver ring he gave to her. She needs no other riches. And this is a good thing, since Bonnet and his men robbed them of the gems. Bonnet's parting jibe about Claire is meant ironically, quote, a virtuous woman is prized above rubies, her price is greater than pearls, unquote. But in this case, Bonnet's words are more true than he knows because Jamie and Claire are back where they so often have been before, hostages to fortune and not knowing where they will end up or how they will support themselves when they get there. They are left at the end of the robbery without the gems and protection of comfort they offered. Instead, Jamie and Claire are stripped down to their essences once again, where they have to trust in one another and what the future might hold in store for them. But this is a familiar place for both of them, since they have often experienced having to start over again with just each other. Even though they are now without the gems, Jamie and Claire really have what they need. They have proven over and over that all they really need is one another. They are whole when they are together.
Well, I mean, if they weren't headed to see his aunt, they'd need a lot more than what they have.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or else it's back to the peach pit.
Oh, gosh. Now you're taking me back to 1990s. What's that show?
90210.
Oh, my gosh. Liz M. writes, losing Frank's ring is sad. It's been a part of her character, and it was her tie to the 20th century. Now her tie is Brianna's pictures and Brianna herself. A new connection and a new era for time traveler Claire. With every tie lost, another wraps itself firmly around Jamie Fraser. Did I don't even remember in the book. Do we ever see the pictures again? They were lost in the...
They lost them in the ocean.
That's what I mean. Cindy R. writes, Claire mourning the loss of Frank's ring and how her hands look vulnerable next to Jamie, and yet how in that vulnerability she feels completely safe because of Jamie. Diana again weaves words, adds the storm and rain as a backdrop, making one feel as if even the sky cries for the loss.
And that was chapter 9 and the end of part 3. So join us next time when we will be beginning part 4 and discussing chapter 10 entitled, aptly enough, Jocasta.
As always, join us to continue the conversation in our Facebook community. You can find us at outlanderpod.com/group.
And again, if you are interested in joining us for our read-along and being a contributor, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/DOA.
If you love our show and are entertained by it, please visit our Patreon page and consider supporting us. Every bit helps cover our costs, be it hosting, recording, equipment, etc. There are also a number of free ways to help support our show. The most important way you can help us out is to spread the word. Tell your friends and family about the Outlander podcast. And with that, thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code Outlander20, Outlander20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlander Pod.